I certainly don't expect everybody to agree with me. In fact, I expect a lot of people to disagree. Maybe this might even piss you off, which is perfectly fine with me.
Evil thrives when good men and women do nothing, when they fail to make a stand. This podcast is about giving you the tools and the information to make that stand. I'm Ron Engelman, Master Sergeant, Krav Maga Black Belt, IDF combat veteran, proud Jew, and grandson to Holocaust survivors. This is the Ron Engelman Podcast.
This is maybe one of the most controversial, not maybe, this is the most controversial topic when it comes to self-defense and martial arts. So if you don't agree with me, you don't like what I'm saying, good for you. Let's have a talk about it. Put something in the comments. I'm happy to put it out there. I certainly don't expect everybody to agree with me. In fact, I expect a lot of people to disagree. Maybe this might even piss you off, which is perfectly fine with me. So there's a problem training in combat sports for people who are interested in self-defense. I'm talking about things like boxing, like wrestling, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, kickboxing. There's a problem training like that when my goal or when something I'm interested in self-defense. Now, don't get me wrong. I love boxing. I've been boxing for 15 years. In addition to my self-defense training, I have no desire or intention to stop. I love Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's a lot of fun. I do that too. And wrestling, heaps of respect. Very, very difficult sport. Very effective. Again, I love all these things. But there's a problem if I'm training in boxing, for example, and my goal is self-defense. When I'm training in these competitive styles, I'm also, in addition to getting better at the skills, I'm also training blind spots into myself. For example, if I'm training in boxing, okay, I'm learning how to move. I'm learning how to punch. I'm learning how to take a punch. I'm learning how to fight against a determined opponent that's trying to hit me just as much as I'm trying to hit them. These are all important, not important. These are all compulsory skills when it comes to training to be able to protect and defend myself. But the problem is I'm training only on that set of rules and I'm developing a blind spot for everything else. I'm developing a blind spot for, you know, if I'm boxing for kicks, I'm not going to be hit with kicks. My whole head movements, everything I'm going to do is going to be very different, not very different, but it's going to be different enough from, for example, if I want to go into a kickboxing match, right? I'm certainly going to have skills that are important, but I don't expect that I'm going to do very well if I'm training for boxing and then I go into a kickboxing match. Okay. Everybody was surprised, right? We had a couple of years ago, they made hundreds of millions of dollars. Mayweather versus McGregor, right? We put a boxer, one of the best that have ever been, against another individual who had zero competitive professional boxing fights. And somehow people thought there was some competition to be had. Who's going to win this fight? I wonder. It's a person who's been training for boxing. So same thing goes. If I'm training in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which is excellent, it's an excellent system. It's a lot of fun. Are you going to be better off than somebody with absolutely no training whatsoever? Of course, you're going to be much better off. But what are you training for? First of all, you're developing blind spots, right? No headbutts, no elbows, no fingers in the eyes, no grabbing, no manipulation of fine joints. So all this stuff I'm training out of myself, and especially more and more jiu-jitsu schools are going the competitive route. Now, I know that, you know, you talk to the original Gracies, they say, you've gone a little bit too far. The purpose of jiu-jitsu is self-defense. Okay, granted, in some schools of experience, they train on striking as well. But if you go back and if you really look, maybe one class out of 50 is going to be dedicated to throwing punches and all the rest is going to be grabs hold because it's jiu-jitsu. It's a grappling style. It's not an MMA style. Okay. So everything that I do is going to be there. Now, one of my experiences, when I just started boxing quite a while ago, I already had quite a bit of martial arts experience, a lot of sparring experience too, by the way, just not specific boxing experience. And one of my friends and training partners and coaches, it was quite experienced, let's say. He fought for the world championship in boxing. So very high level boxer. And I found, of course, you know, I'm not even saying starting in boxing wasn't particularly good in that specific. I knew how to take a punch. I knew how to work aggressively. But the technical side, that's something that I had to come back and learn because my background was Krav Maga. Okay, I knew how to spar aggressively when I've been doing it ever since I was a kid. When we used to spar, we used to put on the gloves. Mouth guards were optional back then. Don't even talk to me about headgear. And we just used to have at it. Just try bloodbath. Just try to hit as hard as you can. You can't do that in boxing, right? You find yourself against somebody skilled. They're just going to turtle up. They're going to cover themselves. Let you get tired for a couple of seconds. And when you're going wild like this, you're also opening yourself up. So you're not going to do very well with speed and unbridled aggression in the boxing ring against a trained boxer. We can talk, and I'm going to mention a little bit later, in the environment of assault, how, to borrow a quote from my friend Tony Blauer, violence loves speed. Right? So here I am in this sparring with my friend, very, very experienced boxer. And I find that, okay, obviously I'm having a difficult time hitting him because he's very well trained. But there's one thing, I keep on hitting, I miss my hooks and I come back and I'm hitting with him with a hammer strike towards the chin, time and time again, with the bottom of my hand. So if you're not familiar with a hammer strike is, it's kind of like a back fist. You're just hitting with the fleshy part, with the underneath of your fist, okay? After a couple of goes, he took me aside and he politely explained that that's not allowed in boxing, okay? So it's not necessarily, I wasn't better. I certainly wasn't better in the boxing ring than the professional boxer, right? But there was this blind spot that I kept on hitting against because it's not something trained for. Now, of course, after you're sparring somebody very quickly, I don't have any doubt that you can go, oh, okay, he's hitting me with a hammer strike, no problem. But out on the street, it all happens in a second. You don't have time to kind of understand where your blind spot. And somewhere else, I was just recently, I saw a video that was making the rounds in a wrestling match, right? One was coming a little bit too rough, pushing his partner. And the other, I think this was in Ukraine, the other guy just had enough of it. Boom, headbutt straight to the head, knocked the guy out cold. Of course, that wasn't expected. We're in a wrestling match. But sometimes the simpler solutions get the job done when it comes to violence. Not just sometimes, it's often. Now, am I saying that all you need to do is know how to throw a headbutt and you'll be able to beat anybody? Absolutely not. Some people have the misconception that, yeah, if I find myself against a trained fighter, I'm just going to kick him in the balls. He's not going to know what to do, and then the fight's over. No. Self-defense, Krav Maga, is a lot more than just hitting people in the balls. Hitting people in the balls is a great solution, but that's only for a second. You can't count that that's going to finish the job. So you definitely need to have the fighting skills behind that. Okay, but these are important things that are often overlooked. Kicking to the balls, eye gouges, grabbing the ears, slapping onto the ears to break in the eardrums. Even things like yelling into the ears, fingers into the eyes, small joint manipulations, biting. All these things are things that we condition ourselves not to do. If you put somebody with absolutely no training and they're fighting for their life, those are exactly the skills that they're going to go for. Scratching, biting, headbutts if they're untrained. So the first thing you're going to learn when you go into your boxing class, especially let's say when you start sparring, or even when you're doing pad work, is calm down, relax, take a breath. Okay, work a little bit slower. Get your technique right first. Then we're gradually going to build it up. You can't just have people going wild, swinging like crazy, hitting their partners with elbows, with headbutts. Just, there's no order. You're not going to learn anything, and you're going to injure yourself and your training partner. Okay. Same thing in jiu-jitsu, very first class, natural instinct. Right. If you've done a bit of grappling, and before you know, the white belt comes in on the first class, and if there's grappling, if we're going to roll a little bit, they're going to go wild. They're going to be stiff. They're going to throw. They're going to be like a wild bull. Okay. And if you find yourself wrestling with somebody like that and you've got some skills, just kind of relax. Let them do their thing. Okay, hold the position, let them tire themselves out, which they will in 10, 20, 30 seconds, they're going to be tired. Find the mistake, and then you can start putting your game plan into action. Okay. So my point is that when we're training in competitive styles, the first thing we learn is protect yourself, take a bit of a break, let things play out, and then put your game plan in. Okay. Now, that works all nice and well when we have certain rules and certain things there to protect ourselves. Okay. But when it's an assault, when somebody just hits me out of nowhere and all of a sudden fists starts flying, every single strike can put me out. I can't just pull a position because I can get a headbutt. I can have elbows. The person's going wild. Violence loves speed. So we naturally train ourselves when we're working in these combat styles is to limit ourselves and to be able to take it a notch down. When you're fighting for your life, survival, it's different from a match. You need to go at 100% intensity because often your opponent's already going to hit you with there. Okay. So we spoke about a few blind spots. One is in terms of when you get into your element, calm down, slow down the match, let it go to where you are. There's a concept, I spoke about it with Danny Netzer on the podcast in boxing, a slow starter, right? In boxing, that's the type of fighters like this, that they hold, they get their guard, they protect themselves, they wait, and they start working in round 3, 4 of the match. In self-defense, slow fighter is going to die, is going to lose, is going to get assaulted 10 times out of 10. We don't have time to see how good you are because these violent assaults are done within a matter of seconds. Okay, now on the next point. People confuse self-defense with street fighting. Okay? What's street fighting? For me, it's the same thing. We can box, we can grapple, can do all these things. It's just something that happens on the street. It's between two willing participants, usually two dickheads that have decided to fight over a car spot or in your local Walmart or whatnot. And both of them want to see who's the better man or woman, right? There's a whole, just like in a boxing match or in a UFC match, people come out, you have your music playing, there's a whole ceremony to it. Same thing, there's a bit of ceremony. You push me, I push you, I swear, you swear, and gradually it builds up. That's a street fight, right? And usually, when I get the better of you, we stop. I don't continue kicking your head and stopping your teeth into the pavement. We've just went from fight into assault now. Self-defense to me is all about assault. It's not two willing participants, more or less the same size, right? When a big man starts bashing a woman, that's assault. That's not a street fight. And I'm sorry, but doesn't matter how good you are in jiu-jitsu, doesn't matter your boxing skills, that's not going to help you because that's not what it's designed to do. Can a smaller opponent in jiu-jitsu overcome a larger opponent? Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what jiu-jitsu was designed to do, but still, strength and size plays a big role. And especially now, if your opponent can headbutt you, can elbow, can utilize all these things that are generally not allowed in jiu-jitsu, which is why jiu-jitsu enables smaller people to overcome larger people, because we can't do all these things that naturally happen when somebody's trying to hurt you. It's a whole different kettle of fish. So I find that the biggest maybe mistake in martial arts is people are training for fighting in the street and they're calling it self-defense, which is two distinct different things. Do we use the same tools? Yes. We punch, we elbow, we knee, we choke people, we fight on the ground, we grapple. Same tools, just like a carpenter and a mechanic will use a screwdriver or a hammer, right? But what we're using these tools for are completely different things. Now, there's another thing. If you want to be functional in jiu-jitsu, let's say, I know I'm picking a lot on jiu-jitsu. I just like jiu-jitsu a lot. But the same thing can apply to boxing. You need 6 months, a year of consistent training to be able to have any effect with it. Again, maybe you're a bit gifted, maybe you're a little bit less gifted physically. Okay, fine. Most of the people who train self-defense, they're not going to sit back for 10 years to get their black belt in jiu-jitsu or to have a few professional boxing fights in order so that they have self-defense. Again, it's silly. You don't get your black belt in anything because you're interested in self-defense. You get your black belt in jiu-jitsu because you love jiu-jitsu, because it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun, right? You do professional boxing matches not so that you can simulate and learn how to defend yourself. You do professional boxing fights because you love boxing and you want to test your skills. Not because you're interested in self-defense. You can have a side interest in that. But again, if you dedicate yourself to anything aggressively for 10 years, you would hope that you have some skills, but also you spend your time developing these blind spots. Okay. There's now a way of things. People are training in knives for self-defense, sticks for self-defense, all these different weapon systems, which are cool. But again, we go down this route again. If you want to teach me how to use nunchucks, awesome. Nunchucks are cool. I love nunchucks. If you want to teach me how to use nunchucks for self-defense, I say get lost. Okay. Same thing, if we want to learn how to fence with a sword, if we want to learn how to use a knife, more power to you if you find it fun. But if you think that then that translates into self-defense with a knife, first of all, depending on where you live, it's probably you're going to find yourself in jail, even if you pull a knife and you were warranted in pulling a knife because you had no other choice. That's the only way you can protect yourself. As far as the law is concerned, you're carrying out a knife. Means you have some expectation, you end up killing somebody with it. Even if in your mind it was self-defense, the prosecution is going to really have an easy time showing that was premeditated murder. But as always, reality is different from training. You can do all your fancy fencing work, but the truth is it doesn't take that much training to kill somebody with a blade. It really doesn't. And the reality of a violence attack is different. And you can go back and listen to a few of the podcasts that I did with Rory Miller, with Tim Larkin, Tony Blauer, and you'll understand the mindset of the criminals are very effective at killing and hurting people and using violence. And it's not because they have fancy martial arts training. They're just very, very efficient at overwhelming people with absolute violence. And that takes an understanding. That takes a certain mindset and experience in violence, but it's not about technique or about sparring prowess. So for me, I'll say it. I think knife sparring for self-defense is bullshit. It's just a misconception. You're not knife sparring for self-defense. You're having fencing fights against other people with knives, or this is a fight. You're not training to defend yourself against an assault, because an assault you don't see coming. It's often an ambush. They're going to jump at you and they're going to overwhelm you with grabs. You're not even going to be able to pull your knife out and you're done. So it's important to have that realistic understanding, the difference between fighting and between assault. And self-defense, Krav Maga, among other systems that try to offer some sort of solution for dealing with assault, for giving self-defense, have to deal in the realm of assault and not fighting. And even though we speak about, boxing is certainly helpful for self-defense. And jiu-jitsu, some people say it was designed and intended for self-defense. But if you look at it, you'll see that most of the competitions and most of how it's practiced is in very limited capacity, limiting out things that injure or that makes the techniques or the art that they're trying to showcase not that effective. On the one hand, and it's often people equally skilled, similar size, same sex, not only, but you'll see that that's where 99% of the training happens. Where if you're a woman who's interested in training for self-defense, you shouldn't be training in your weight category. That's where you practice, you learn the skills, but you should always be training against larger opponents. Yes, there are open weight classes, things like that, but these are the exception to the rules. So is jiu-jitsu helpful for self-defense? Yes, absolutely. But it's not the whole picture, and it certainly gives you blind spots. Martial art or anything that's trained for self-defense needs to give you the whole picture. Okay, I think out of everything, boxing is an excellent infrastructure for self-defense. You learn how to move. You learn how to punch somebody in the face, which is one of the most important tools that we use in self-defense. You learn how to move. You learn how to fight under stress, which is probably the best thing when somebody's coming to hit you. But again, it's only the start. It's only the structure, right? It's the tools, but it's not the actual application in a realistic environment, or even the application in an environment, in a self-defense environment, right? We come out of our corner. First of all, we're prepared for it. We know who we're going to fight. We know when we're going to fight. We know that there are similar skills, similar weight class. We know what the rules are. We do a bit of stretching. We get in the mindset, and then we fight. All these are exactly the opposite of what happens with violent assault on the street. Because that's got to be the assumption. Because if you knew that was going to be happening, you'd choose not to be there. Or you'd grab some object, or you'd do something to give you the upper edge, right? I've heard a sense a quote. I can't remember whose it was, but whether it's in military or whether it's in self-defense, if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough to win, right? I have no intention of having a fair fight when I'm fighting for my life. On the contrary, I'm going to find any trickery, any object, anything I can do to tilt the odds in my favor, because I'm not trying to beat you in a competition of skill. I'm trying to destroy you and to survive. First to survive. If I have to destroy in the process, so be it. Okay, that's not to say that everything is rosy and perfect in the world of self-defense training and martial art. On the contrary, we have a big problem over there. What's the big problem? Well, the first thing that people fall into is it's very hard to create a scenario situation with resisting opponents. Most or a lot of the training, unfortunately, that you're going to see in martial arts, it's against cooperative opponents, right? You stab me from here, I block like this, I punch in the face, you're going to give an reaction, I'm going to grab you, you're going to work with me, which is okay for learning the skills. We're going to do the same thing in boxing and in jiu-jitsu, right? In your first class, you're not just going to jump in, and at least not in a good school. You're not just going to jump in and grapple as hard as you can. Your coach is going to teach you some drills, some techniques. Your partner is going to flow with it. You're going to work. But then you work your way up to an opponent that's trying to submit you, and you're trying to submit them. That's one of the beautiful things about jiu-jitsu. It keeps things honest, right? In martial arts, we can sit and we can talk. Well, if he comes at me with a knife from this angle, I'm going to do this. I'm going to grab this. And he's going to say, yeah, but if you do this, what if he does that? And we can sit and we can talk for ages, and maybe we won't come to a conclusion. In boxing, it's like, let's get in the ring and we see who wins. We get a definite answer. Okay. Same thing in all competitive styles. We get a definite answer, a limited answer to that specific environment. Still, we get an answer. Okay. In martial arts training, because a lot of it happens with opponents, let's call it training partners that are cooperating, that are letting you do your skills, it's so much more subject to misconceptions and even fooling yourself and your students if you're a coach. Now, I believe that the mass majority of this is not to ill intention. I don't think that many people go in and are going to say, I'm going to teach you stuff that I know that doesn't work with intent of whatever, fooling you, of taking your money. I'm sure that happens, but I refuse to resist, to believe that that's the mass majority of coaches. It's unless I've put things to the test, I don't know if they're going to work or not. They're just theories. And that's a problem, because how can I simulate a real environment? Okay, so first of all, we train with rubber knives, okay? Why? Because it allows us to go a little bit harder. Because if, and we do sometimes train with real knives. Okay, you're going to be really careful with your training partner if you're not some sort of psychopath, right? Otherwise, we both, one of us ends up in the hospital and you lose your insurance. The insurance is not going to cover a martial arts school where his students keep on going into the EU for stitches because they've been training with real knives like crazy. No, that's not, so we can't do that. So first of all, that's a problem. Second of all, even, okay, we're training, the general rule is the more I protect my training partner, the harder I can go at him, right? If we want to have a boxing match, if we have good padded gloves, we can hit each other stronger, right? When I'm sparring, I'm using 14, 16 ounce gloves and so on. In a boxing match or in an MMA match, right? We're working very differently. Look at the original UFCs. Look how, when they were working bare knuckle, look how much, how comfortable they were standing in the pocket and throwing punches. Not at all. People really kept their distance in there early, because any punch without gloves can completely open your face. A lot of the UFC fighters, you'll see when they're doing sparring, when they're doing heavy sparring, they're using boxing gloves. Are they using boxing gloves? Because when they're going to compete, shouldn't they be training with open finger gloves? It's 4-6 ounces. But we need to have the hard training. So I'm going to put more protection on my hands, on my training partner, so that we can go harder. So if I want a resisting opponent that's going to give me any resistance in my, let's call it martial arts self-defense training, I need to protect them either by protective equipment or by limiting them with the rules. But even in the best case, I can never simulate the environment from which I'm training. And that's where we suffer from a disadvantage, right? Because if I'm training for a boxing match, ultimately, I go into that boxing match and I'm going to fight. Now, if I'm training to protect myself out on the street against, let's take it to Israel, I'm training my soldiers to defend themselves against the terrorists coming at them and trying to stab them, let's say, a specific event, which is realistic and likely. And I've had several soldiers who have been in situations where people tried to stab them, terrorists, some were stabbed, some were able to use their self-defense. So this is the situation. But I, in training, I can't put you in the actual situation over there, because it's a situation with risk of death. Now, same thing. Okay, I can't put you in a training partner and have a, I can have a bare knuckle boxing match, okay, in, you know, Wednesday night beginner's class. I can do that. But first of all, I'm not going to have very many students. And second of all, we're simulating, again, something very specific. We covered this at the beginning, right? I'm simulating a fight with two people of equal size, equal skills. And even though there's no gloves, and I can say, okay, no rules, you can headbutt, you can elbow. Okay, we know that this will end in injury already. Even the training gym, somebody's going to lose some teeth or something, or an eye. Okay. But we're simulating a fight. We're not simulating self-defense. If I want to simulate, it's okay, I'm going to put my wife, you know, against somebody twice her size and say, okay, go at it, try to kill each other. And even then, it doesn't simulate. We can get into this. You might have heard some of my other podcasts. Only in such a, I'm going to ironically use the term matchup, because it's not a matchup, it's assault. Only one party there is fighting for their life. The other is trying to execute something. They want to rob, they want to rape, they want to kidnap, but they're not trying to win. The moment it comes at too much of a cost, the very likelihood they're going to disengage, or they're going to at least leave an opportunity to get away. So when I'm dealing with assault and self-defense, my job is not to defeat the person coming to attack me, it's to overwhelm them and create a space where I can escape, where I can pull out my pistol, where I can grab an object, or where I can yell and get some attention or something. So again, I'm training for something very different. All right, so what can I do? We spoke about the problems. what can I do as when I'm training in self-defense? If I can't put you in the actual situation, and even if you were in the actual situation, right, who's to say the next time it's going to be the same, right? This time, you know, somebody tried to mug you, okay? Somebody hit you with a coward punch from behind, knock you down the ground, try to kick your head in. All right, next time somebody tries to stab you, every situation is going to be different. Okay, but we can take very useful things from the competitive styles, that their goal is training for resistance. That's should ours. So there's certainly some things that we, some tools that we can steal, we can borrow, that we can implement. Okay, in a boxing match, okay, maybe something worked really good for my last match against my opponent, but the next match, he's a bit bigger. He's a bit maybe longer. Okay, maybe they're left-handed, a southpaw. So I'm now going to train. My training camp is going to be for this specific fight. What do I do in boxing? Again, showing how it's different. If I'm a professional boxer, or let's say I'm in the UFC, right? My training camp is going to consist of training me for the specific upcoming fight. Okay. Are they really good at striking? Are they a kickboxer? So I'm going to bring in kickboxers to train against. Not necessarily even MMA fighters. I'm going to bring professional kickboxers that are really good because I'm going to train on that specific element. Are they southpaws? Okay. So anybody who fights orthodox is irrelevant. Okay. Everybody who's going to spar against, I'm going to train against in my training camp, is going to be southpaw, is going to be left-handed. Okay. Are they a grappler? Okay, so I'm going to work on something very specific. Not even grappler. Okay, what are the tools? Do they, over the last five matches, they finished with guillotine. Okay, I'm going to train on countering the guillotine. We can take from that and we can simulate the thing that we need to defend against for self-defense. What's the situation? Okay, who are you? What are the threats that you're going to face? Okay, are you a 65-year-old businessman that travels a lot? Okay, so probably a bar fight or an assault in a bar is not one of your concerns. One of your concerns is probably going to be maybe kidnapping, okay? Maybe muggings that or robberies that go bad. So I train for something specific. I've seen awful instructors, even in the military, right? They're working with combat soldiers, and they're going to teach now how to defend, what to do. A combat soldier in full kit gear, what to do if somebody comes and grabs you with their fingers, grabs you and chokes you by the neck. Really? Who's going to choke a soldier by the neck with their hands, right? Soldiers are operating with weapons, and at the very least, a squad, right? Four, a unit of four together. Is that really a threat? Or maybe stabbings are a bigger threat, or rifle abduction. So I need to know who I'm working with and what they need to do. If it's a women's self-defense class, same thing. I'm not going to teach them how to retain their M4 rifle. Not relevant. I'm going to teach them what to do if somebody grabs them by the throat, because that is relevant. So the first thing is I need to understand what are the threats that are relevant to me, who are the attackers going to be, what environment that I'm going to be training or that I'm going to have to protect myself in, and then I'm going to bring and try to simulate as much as that environment. Okay, so what do we want to simulate? We want to simulate hitting somebody under stress. Okay, let's do some boxing-type sparring. Let's put on gloves and let's simulate what it is to hit somebody. Okay, we're simulating that specific skill set. Okay, but it's also going to happen probably by surprise. You didn't expect it, because if you expect, it's going to be an ambush sort of attack. Because if you expected it, you would have probably disengaged. You would have probably done something. Okay, so I'm going to get you in class. I'm going to get you to close your eyes. I'm going to get you to work on the back, do something, and then somebody's going to grab you when you weren't prepared, when it shocked you, when somebody hit you. First of all, maybe we'll give them a shield. You close your eyes and boom, they hit you with a shield to kind of stun you. You get knocked off balance, And now you're going to have to start fighting. Okay, so we simulate that. What else? Your heart rate is going to be up. Okay, that's good. Why is your heart rate going to be up? Well, because of the stress of the situation, maybe because they were yelling in your face first, maybe they started pushing you and your adrenaline goes and all your blood is buzzing and your fight or flight responses are going. It's going to be very different from when you were, you know, doing it with your partner, practicing the moves with your partner in the training hall, nice and slow and relaxed because your coach told you to work on your technique, which is the first space. But then when we want to simulate the environment, I'm going to get you to run up and down, do sprints. You're going to do burpees. You're going to be in a situation where you can barely breathe because you're so out of breath. And now they're going to grab you. Now they're going to choke you. Now they're going to try to grab your weapon off of you. And now you have to fight. So this is how I can simulate. One of the things that we did in Israel, can't do it everywhere, the laws. But the problem with training with rubber knives is there's no real threat, right? So they hit you. They often, you won't even feel when the knife touches you, scrapes you, cuts you, because it's rubber. There's no real respect. You become, what's the word? Maybe conditioned to it. So what do? We give your training partner a taser, and they're going to come at you as if it's a knife. And trust me, when somebody comes even from the other side of the room charging at you with a taser that goes click, 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 you're going to have a much more panicked response. You're not going to be so brave and hold your ground and block and punch. Your reaction is going to be a lot more frightened, which is good because this is simulating a response. Afterwards, make sure to open the windows of the gym because everything is going to smell like burnt hair and fried chicken. But this is, again, ways that we can kind of put the picture together. So difference, right? When I'm boxing training, right, we're going to work on the focus mitts to get speed and we're going to get accuracy, right? But we don't work power on the focus mitts. I'm going to put you on the bag. Okay, over there, you're going to get power. Okay, we're going to get you quite a few rounds on the ropes to condition yourself, right? We're going to do some weights for power. We're going to build the full spectrum of what we need. No difference for self-defense training. A good coach or good training needs to build the most complete picture. We're never going to get the absolute picture. We're going to try to build the most realistic situation in a safe way, critical safety, relevant to your experience and your skill level. So that's the full realm, let's say, of it. First of all, I need to know what my threats are. If I'm a coach, what the threats of the people that I'm coming to train are. What are they likely going to face? Are they going to face terrorists with knives? Are they going to face sexual assault or rape attempt, mugging, kidnap, coward attack, ambush from behind, lynching? What are we training for? Abduction of their firearm, control and restraint for police? What am I trying to accomplish here? What are the main threats? Okay, so that's first thing. Okay, what's the operating environment? Okay, where is this going to happen? Okay, who is the person that's going to attack them? They're going to be bigger than them. They're going to be about the same size. Are they going to be under the influence of drugs? Okay, is it a weapon likely to be involved? Is it groups? Maybe it's all of the above. Okay, I need to incorporate all of that into the training. Okay, can the fight go onto the ground? Absolutely. Okay. All these things have to be, if I don't get to say, okay, in martial art, in self-defense training, I don't get to limit myself to the environment. I need to give an answer to everything that my student or myself can reasonably face. And the final thing is, of course, what are my skill levels? What am I coming to the table with? Am I big? Am I small? Am I a man? Am I a woman? Okay. Is my student ...60 years old and unfit? We're not going to be kicking anybody. We're not going to be throwing high roundhouse kicks to the head. Not helpful, not relevant. Okay. Do they have a black belt in Taekwondo? I got to be a fool to say, no, we don't kick to the head. It's not relevant. Don't use the tool. You have tools that you're good at. Are they, you know, an experienced grappler? Excellent. Okay, let's incorporate that and let's put it in. I'm not saying don't train in these styles. I train in them and encourage you to train too. Just understand that it's not the whole picture. It's not self-defense. And self-defense needs to give you the full entire picture. Okay. So how do we even know it works, right? Because we can't put you in the boxing match. We can't put you in the AACC, the IBJJF tournament. So how do I know that what I'm training you actually mirrors and it's going to work? So in Krav Maga, we have an advantage because we have a pretty large sample size. Every single soldier that goes into the Israeli army learns Krav Maga. And I would say, unfortunately, the Israeli Defense Force is a very active military and has been for the last 74 years. A lot of the soldiers get attacked. And we get to see how well the training adds up, doesn't add up. And in the higher realms of coaches in the Israeli army, we also interview and we research. If you listen to the podcast I did with Danny Netzer, he talks a little bit about soldiers that he trained or soldiers, instructors under his command trained. And then we're in a situation where they were attacked and they were able to deflect or survive that situation. And then we go and we understand, okay, how was it? What training this soldier actually received beforehand? Did he have weeks and weeks of Krav Maga training? Or was it just, you know, one-hour class? And did that help? Didn't it help? So the best, there are a lot of things. There are also a lot of very smart people in self-defense, training martial arts. And that's not to be discounted, right? So first of all, we have our, you know, reasoning and our common sense. But also, that's not enough. We want to test it. And we can see situations where people had to use these skills. Nowadays, most of the, pretty much all of the checkpoints, soldier area, we have CCTV cameras. We can analyze real events too, and we can see what happened. And we can see what the soldiers did. And we see, did it work? Didn't it work? And Krav Maga adapts, and we change, and we develop. And any good martial arts, any good self-defense system should be based and formulated and studied in what actually works. And Krav Maga has this advantage where so many soldiers train also in the Israeli army, also around the world, train in the system. And because of their job, they also have to use it. And I've had several students who've had to use the training and quite a few where it saved their life. Now, you can also argue, you can say, okay, that's applicable to soldiers, but how do I know that the skills and the training and even the soldiers that you're training, how applicable it is for civilians? And that's a very valid question. And the answer is, you know, on a personal level, I know a lot of people who've trained Krav Maga under me, under the instructors who I'm responsible for, and even instructors that I've worked with that had to use their skills and they worked. So that's already an indication. But I want to go back to the relevant experience, right? I've heard self-defense experts. My favorite is bouncers, right? You certainly learn a lot about human behavior, if anything, standing on the door of a nightclub where there's alcohol, where there's egos, where there's men, women, young people full of testosterone, you learn a lot about violence and about human behavior. There's this one guy who's been in over 100 fights as a bouncer, right? So that's his claim to fame, right? I've been 100 fights. I understand violence. I understand self-defense. First of all, that's a very bad bouncer. That's been hundreds of fights. I certainly don't want them working in my pub or nightclub, because that's a legal liability, a walking lawsuit. Okay, but let's put that aside. Okay, is it relevant for self-defense? Right, we're talking about a bouncer. I assume he's big, working in a group. Okay, and it's who was it? I think it was Tim Larkin who said I think it was Till Market. Also, a reference to something like that. He's had the same fight 100 times, right? Is his knowledge and skill relevant for women that's trying to learn how to defend themselves? You judge for yourself. Is it relevant for somebody who wants to defend themselves against an abduction, mugging? I don't know. I'm not saying it's not something. It's certainly something. And I know a lot of bouncers and a lot of soldiers, police officers, and people who've been training for years and years in martial arts, very skilled and intelligent people, find themselves, and also it's work as bouncers, work at security, and you'll certainly learn a lot from that. But be careful if somebody goes in, I've had, 300 street fights. Why? Why? What are you doing? Who are you that you keep on finding yourself in situations that constantly lead to violence? For me, that's a failure, not a success. Okay, so we covered a lot. Am I saying that you shouldn't train in boxing or jiu-jitsu? Hell no. I train boxing and jiu-jitsu. Am I saying that they have no use for self-defense, that you shouldn't do it? No, I'm not saying that either. I think they have a lot of use. I'm saying that competitive styles don't give you the full picture. You're training for very limited, by definition limited. Why limited? For safety, in order to be able to play out your art and what you're training on, your skill set. So competitions are, what are they? They're an exhibition of skills. And if you go in to learning how to protect yourself and think that you're training to be able to exhibit your skills on the street, best case, you'll find yourself in jail or sued for tens of thousands of dollars for assault. And worst case, you're going to get yourself hurt pretty badly. So we need to train with an open mind. And if you're training in purely self-defense, you need to be doing sparring. You need to be doing grappling. You need to be training against a resisting opponent. And if you can't find it in the school where you're training, maybe try to complete yourself, the skills yourself elsewhere. Don't throw it away. Don't throw your training because it could be quite valuable. At the highest level, right, of professional athletes, right, they'll have a grappling coach, they'll have a striking coach, they'll have a nutritionist, they'll have a weightlifting coach or power coach. They have all these things, and they'll have somebody who puts the whole strategy, who orchestrates everything and puts it all together in one place. Now, if you're not a professional athlete, you may not have the resources or even the need to have all of that. But I hope my little talk gave you a little bit of an open understanding of the full picture that I'm trying to build myself towards. I need, first and foremost, to be training and having the skills and the techniques that are going to be relevant for what I'm going to be facing. And if you're a normative, nonviolent human being, you're not training to fight in the street. You're not a street fighter. You're training to survive assault. And if you don't find resistance training, and if you're not sparring, if you're not grappling against an opponent that's trying to out-grapple you, there's no competitive aspects to it, then you need to finish that somewhere else. Now, maybe I'll finish off with, at what point should you be doing this? If you want to learn French, Japanese, and Mongolian at the same time, you're going to have a really difficult time. My advice to you is choose one language first. Get really skilled at it. Become fluent. and then think of picking up another one. Now, if you're trying to learn Krav Maga, boxing, and jiu-jitsu all at the same time, you're going to be stunted everywhere. Choose something first. You know what? Maybe choose something that you enjoy. Let's talk about that. We talked all about training to survive violence. If you want to train on anything, you want to train long term, right? It should be pursuits of years, hopefully, right? Not it doesn't take years to be able to become efficient at self-defense. Well, Krav Maga was designed specifically to train soldiers, so they don't need to train for 10 years to get their black belts, because that simply doesn't work for soldiers. It was about what skills do they need to do? How can we deliver it quickly so that they go in front line and they can survive these violent assaults if they have to, in close quarters, zero range. Okay. But just like shooting, okay, you can be an excellent marksman, but if you're not at the range once a month, and if now you stop for a few years, you're going to lose your edge. Okay, you're not going to be as quick. You're not going to be as accurate. You need to be shooting on a regular basis to maintain those skills. Same thing goes for martial arts. Is it possible that you learn some technique and 10 years later, all of a sudden, you found yourself in a situation and you were able to do that? It's possible. But it's not as likely as if you're training on a regular basis, if you're sparring on a regular basis, you're conditioned to it. If you're training your how to defend it against a knife on a regular basis, your body has that quickly. They can draw upon those skills. So my advice is find something that you enjoy first and foremost. If you don't enjoy it, what's the point? You're not going to stick to it. If you don't like getting punched in the head on a regular basis, I know, weird. I can't imagine how somebody could not enjoy that. But maybe boxing isn't for you. Okay. Well, maybe let's say it's like whiskey. It's an acquired taste. But if you're finding yourself dreading the training, maybe that's not the right mindset, because when you should be excited about showing up to training. You shouldn't go and go, oh, I have to drag myself to this. I really don't want to do this, but I know I have to. Okay, that shouldn't be your relationship with the training, especially if you're not a professional soldier or if you're a police officer. If you're training for it, should be something that brings you happiness, gets you fit. You should have nice people that you're training with, friends. That's what a martial arts gym should be. It should be a community. Get the skills first, and then after you have a few years, people want everything now, right now, nowadays. No. Okay. You want to learn boxing and jiu-jitsu? Fine. Train jiu-jitsu for 3-4 years and get your purple belt, get your brown belt. Be where you are in a good point, and then, okay, take on boxing. Start to build up on that. Okay, and same thing, if you're a white belt in Krav Maga, and you're listening to this talk, and you're like, oh yeah, we don't have resistance training, we haven't done any sparring. First of all, you shouldn't be sparring, early on. I'd say a minimum of 6 months. I know schools were a year until you go into full contact sparring, because, again, getting punched in the face is no joke. But my recommendation is a couple of years, even in Krav Maga. At least Krav Maga is a bit of a... We say fast to learn, not easy, absolutely not easy, but quick to learn, not easy to learn. Get a year in of serious training of 2-3 times a week and then bring in another style. So I've had even students, instructors going in, okay, I think I'm going to now, I've been doing Krav Maga, I'm going to pick up boxing as well. I'm like, okay, excellent. How many times a week do you train Krav Maga? I've got kids and my work's a bit busy at the moment. And consistently, I'm there almost every week, like once a week. Sometimes I can make it twice a week. I'm like, you really have the time to pick up another discipline? Okay. Or maybe get your life in order and then get consistent training in one thing. And once you've got that, you can pick up something else as well, right? You shouldn't be training in boxing to become better at Krav Maga. You should be training in boxing because you like boxing, because you want to become better at boxing. And certainly it's going to supplement your Krav Maga. But if you're not doing very much Krav Maga, doing a tiny bit of boxing as well is not going to be doing you any favors either. Okay, so that's why sometimes people are a little bit too keen. They get in back into martial arts and like, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to sign up to the gym that has jiu-jitsu, boxing, Krav Maga, Filipino martial arts. It's beautiful. And CrossFit. And I'm going to do everything. Right? But sometimes they do for about 3 weeks. And then they burn out. And then you need to be training for longevity. So that's it. Hopefully, I hope I gave you, given you some perspective, some idea into your training. Ideally, as a coach or in your gym, you should be able to have everything. You should be able to have your self-defense training as part of your self-defense training. You should be doing sparring, full contact sparring with boxing gloves. You should be doing grappling. It doesn't have to be jiu-jitsu. You could be doing grappling and Krav Maga. You could be doing sparring and Krav Maga. Could be doing wrestling, but whatever it is, it doesn't, you know what, it doesn't really matter to me personally, the system that you're doing. It doesn't matter if it's boxing or if it's kickboxing. It doesn't matter if it's jiu-jitsu or sambo or freestyle wrestling. It doesn't matter as long as you're working against a resisting opponent on the ground. It doesn't really matter what you're doing as long as you're trying to hit somebody who's trying to hit you as well, at a reasonable intensity. And if you get all of that in your self-defense or Krav Maga school, hang on to it. You've got a good place. And if the culture is good and you like the coach and you like the students, you're one of the lucky ones. So stay safe. Look after yourself. And approach everything with an open mind. It's always the beginner. It's the blue belt in jiu-jitsu who goes, jiu-jitsu is the only real thing. Everything else is bullshit, right? And it's the blue belt in Krav Maga that goes, you know what? If somebody grabs me, somebody tries to go to the ground, I'm going to put my fingers in the eyes. I'm going to kick them in the balls. I don't play that game. Okay, good. It's the black belt who has a little bit more experience in their art that also knows the limitations of their art. And also has a little bit more respect for other styles because they've been around and they know that all the answers don't lie in one place. So always be careful about somebody who's, you know, too quick to dismiss everything else. I think there's value you can learn from anything, from anywhere. You got to be smart. You got to take things with a grain of salt. Or is there bullshit out there? Absolutely. There is a lot of bullshit out there. But unless you're very well experienced, unless you have a lot of experience in what you're training and preferably in those other things, don't be so quick to dismiss because there's probably a lot that you don't know. And that's what we want to go into our training. We want to go in with humility and we want to go into white belt mentality. Because if I step on the mat with the assumption that I don't know what you're about to teach me, I have everything to learn. But if I step on the mat and I go, well, I know all of this, I've got my knife defenses sorted. I've done enough of that. I'll do the training, but I already know this technique. Promise you won't learn anything. I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Stay safe and keep on training. Peace.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, and if you're feeling especially generous, leave me a rating and a review. The full episode notes are available on ronengelman.com, where you'll find links to what we discussed today and information on how you can train with me and my team in Israel. Stay safe, stay healthy, please stay well, and I'll see you around.